We will head over to Mike Causey and see what's going on sports-wise. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
You know, early in the game, I watched an inning or two of the Yankee game, then I went to sleep. But when I got up, once again, you came to mind. The Yankees scored a winning run that was knocked in by a signal. And you know how that runner got into scoring position?
They put him on second base.
No. He actually stole second base. Then there was a wild pitch, and he wound up to third base. And the single knocked him in.
The Yankees blew a 6-0 lead yesterday.
Yeah. Came back to win, though. That's amazing.
The difference in the team. Yeah. I mean, if they play base to base, they probably don't score that run to win the game.
That's why I wanted to point that out. I think, you know, in a close game, I think it was Tyler Wade, who's really fast, having that ability to move the runner to a scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen in games they lost by one run in the end when they blew leads.
Nope.
Didn't happen. So that's one of the biggest differences of this team is putting runners in scoring position and getting the hits.
That is the biggest difference, because their pitching's not that much better. Gallo's hitting home runs here and there for them. He had a 3-run homer last night, which was big. Took the game from 3-0 to 6-0, but it still came down to somebody stealing the base, in position to move to third on the pass ball, like you said, and then scoring on a base hit.
Yeah,
that's the difference in the game.
Yeah, it really it's when you look at it, and if you look at the past Yankees this 12 win streak, you'll see a lot of that taking that extra base, stealing and stuff like that. You'll see people moving runners over, which the Yankees never did.
No,
never. So
that's the difference. Yeah. I watched the Mets last night because I had a reason to watch the Mets last night. It's called a wager against the Mets. And they didn't let me down. They lost to the Giants. The Giants are an odd team. They don't have a lot. But their lineup every night is pretty full of base hits. They go with the pitch. They get a couple of long balls put in. Their lineup's pretty good. A lot of guys you don't know, but a lot of guys are playing pretty good. I mean, you know Belt and you know Crawford. You know a couple of guys like that. But then, you know, Carl Yastrzemski's grandson's playing well. The catcher, he's having a career year after missing a lot of baseball, Buster Posey. And the pitchers are just doing their job. So it's going to be interesting in the playoffs because the Dodgers, man, I tell you what, I think they're the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
I watched them the last couple nights against San Diego. I watched them last night because of a thing called a wager. And last night, Max Scherzer just showed how good he is as a pitcher. 7 2/3, gave up 2 hits. One was a C&I hit, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts. He just put San Diego to sleep last night. He made Machado and Tatis look like fools. He gets ahead of guys. He makes them chase pitches he wants them to swing at. He's just a dominant throwback old-school pitcher. And pitching with the Dodgers, it's some staff they got. They got the left-hander Arias, who's a pretty good pitcher. A lot of people don't know him. He's a good pitcher. And then you got Buehler. He is very, very good. A young kid from Vanderbilt, probably in like his fourth year, and he's sandwiched around Scherzer, and he will be sandwiched around Kershaw. Kershaw doesn't win big games. Kershaw doesn't have to win big games for this team. He's their number 3 pitcher at best, maybe even possibly number 4. They have Price. Remember Price played for the White Sox and not the the Blue Jays, the Red Sox bounced around, and he gets totally destroyed every time he pitches against the Yankees.
Yep.
He's their number 5 pitcher, and in postseason, number 5 pitchers don't see much action, so he's not going to pitch in the postseason. The Dodgers' starting staff is dominant. They're proven seasoned pitchers, and they're going to be very, very tough to beat in the playoffs. Are the Dodgers going to catch the Giants? I don't know. The Giants keep winning. So the Dodgers, who might be the best team in baseball, is going to be forced to play in that stupid play-in game. But unlike other teams that are going to play in that play-in game, they're gonna have
enough pitching.
Kershaw going in that first game.
Yeah, they don't have to put their best up front. You're exactly right. Yeah.
And here's the other thing Yankee fans have to worry about. They better beat Tampa. And I don't think they're going to catch them. I looked at the schedule and who they have against each other and stuff like that. They basically have a five-game lead over the Yankees right now with 34-35 games to play. And the Tampa Bay has 15 games against weak teams that they should go 13-2 at worst. All right? And then they have 19 games against pretty good teams. Well, if they go 13-2 and they go 10-9 against the bad teams, the Yankees have to go 30-5, 30-4 to tie them. So it's going to be tough for the Yankees to catch Tampa unless Tampa falls apart. And the reason what I'm getting at is they're going to play Boston in the play-in game. And Chris Sale's back for Boston. And he's pitched three games, and he looks absolutely dominating. Now, the problem with Chris Sale, that doesn't happen with Scherzer and Buehler and them guys, he doesn't go deep. So if the Yankees can survive for five innings on their side of the pitching and not give up a bunch of runs to Boston, they could probably beat Boston. But if Sale somehow manages to go eight innings, the Yankees are going to be very, very hard-pressed to beat the Red Sox. So the Yankees have to play unbelievable ball to try to get ahead of Tampa Bay, because if not, that's the roadblock they're going to have to pass. And in that one-game play-in game to get into a regular playoff match, one pitcher can dominate anybody, and that's the pitcher, that's the guy that they're going to have to beat. So we'll see how that plays out. But the Dodgers, man, they're very impressive.
All right. Got any racing for us this weekend?
Yeah, we got some. Today we got one race. It's the seventh race at Saratoga. Saratoga's got New York bread day today. All New York bread stakes. How can you have that the day before the Traverse? I mean, New York bread racing, it's gotten better, but it's very inconsistent. So in today's seventh race, we're going to go with the eight-horse Coffee Bar. This horse is coming off a mile and an eighth race, which is the distance of today's race. Gets blinkers. He gets Flavian Pratt. Ortiz goes to ride somebody else. Flavian Pratt picks up the mount. Flavian Pratt's probably the second-best rider at Saratoga today and tomorrow when he leaves TAC in California. So our top pick for today in the seventh race is going to be the eight-horse Coffee Bar. Going on to a couple races tomorrow, there was a threat of rain, and now it's kind of dissipated, but I went with all dirt races because of that threat of rain. The seventh race tomorrow is the Grade 1 Ballerina going 7 furlongs on the dirt. The one horse, Gamine, trained by Bob Baffert, she's 8 of 9 lifetime. She's going to be the biggest odds-on favorite of the day. Maybe in the Travers you might get another one. She looks like Lone Speed. I really tried to beat her with other horses, but there's nobody to push her. Unless she breaks bad or something, she's going to be very hard to beat. Horse I'm going to try to beat her with is going to be the 5-horse Sconson. This horse has been chasing Bells, the one who, in my opinion, is the best sprinting filly and mare in the country. And so running second to Bells, the one, a few times is no disgrace. Sconson did run against Gamine earlier in the year at Churchill Downs, got beat a length. Maybe can turn the tables. I mean, Saratoga is the graveyard of favorites. You don't know. Sconson's in really, really good shape, coming in off a 47 flat work at Ellis Park, tuning up for this race. So at 9-2, I'm going to take the shot to try to beat Gamine, but she will be tough to beat without any other speed in the race. So in the Ballerina, we're going to go with the number 5 Sconson to try to upset Gamine. The race right after it is the 8th race. It's the Grade 1 Forgo, going 7 furlongs. Horse I picked a couple weeks ago that paid $70 to win is in this race, Lexingtonian. I'm going to use Lexingtonian in my exactas. I don't think I'm going to bet him to win this time. Coming into the last time that the horse ran in the Vanderbilt, came off a fantastic work of 47 flat, which is the 4th best work out of 113 horses at the distance that day. The work that this horse has coming into tomorrow is very, very lackluster, to say something nice about it. Ran 4 furlongs in 52 seconds, was the 158th fastest work out of 160 horses. That doesn't get me excited about tomorrow. I'm going to use the horse in my exactas, but my top pick in the four goes going to be the seven horse, Yao Pan, trained by Steve Asmussen. This horse went to Dubai in March, ran bad race there, ran 11th in the Golden Shaheen, going six furlongs. Came back in Pimlico on 4th of July in an overnight stake to win very, very impressively at 40 cents on a dollar. This horse has five wins and seven starts. The only time this horse lost was in the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland last year when it had big, big traffic problems as the 6-5 favorite and lost over in Dubai in March. So other than those two, this horse is 5-5. You're going to get a decent price on this horse tomorrow because I think he's going to be overlooked. So the seven horse in the eighth race, Yao Pan, is going to be my top pick, and I'll use the three Lexingtonian in an exacta. Brings us to the big race of the weekend, which is the Travers up in the 12th race tomorrow. Post time is 6:12. Seven horses only line up for the Travers, and a lot of them ran against each other in the Jim Dandy. Tomorrow, Essential Quality is going to be about 1-5. I don't bet 1-5 horses. I look to beat 1-5 horses. If I have $5 in my pocket, why am I going to risk it to win one? It just doesn't make sense. I'm going to throw Essential Quality out, hope that he throws in a clunker. Probably won't. Probably be somewhere in there. But two horses I'm looking at to try to beat him with. One is the one horse, Midnight Bourbon, who was the horse that clipped heels in the Haskell. Was running a nice race until that point off a layoff since May, came back to run in July. Horse is a lot tighter, has two nice works up at Saratoga, trained by Steve Asmussen. Guy knows how to win big races. I'm going to be overlooked in the betting because of that debacle at the Meadow at Monmouth Park. So I'm going to use him. And the other horse is the obvious horse, Keep Me in Mind. This horse ran second by a half length to Essential Quality in the Jim Dandy. Training very, very well after that race. Came back with two nice bullet works, going four furlongs up at Saratoga. 47 flat on the fast track was the best work out of 80 horses that day. Caught a muddy strip next time out. Still went 47-2. This horse is in good shape. This horse can definitely turn the tables on Essential Quality. Distance is not a disadvantage for Keep Me in Mind. I'm going to go with that horse to win. We're going to go with the three Keep Me in Mind to win the Travers, the one Midnight Bourbon for second in an exacta, and I'll throw Essential Quality in second in an exacta against Keep Me in Mind, because if he wins at 1-5 on top, you're looking at an $8 exacta. I don't play $8 exacta. So 1-3-3-1 in the Travers with the three Keep Me in Mind to win. That's our look at races for today and tomorrow.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens during the course of the week, and we'll check with you next weekend. Have a good weekend, Mike.
You got it, Marshall. Have a good one.
Take care. Mike Causey with a check on sports this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio.